Welcome, baseball fans, to episode 95 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast exclusively available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the baron of all baseball podcasts. Two quick notes before we are joined by our special guest. Our podcast is seeking a sponsor or sponsors, so if you or anyone you know is interested in sponsoring the Nats GM Show, please go to natsgm.com for further details. And secondly, thank you to our friend, Mont Easy, for our theme music. Hit it, my friend.
The Baron. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The People's Podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that.
And now I am joined by writer at Baseball Prospectus, the 2015 Labor and Tout Wars winner, and one of the top fantasy baseball contestants around. I'm joined by Mike Gianella. Mike, welcome back to the Nats GM Show.
Hey, Brian, how you doing? It's good to be back. I think I was on, what, last year at this time?
Yeah, I try to do a fantasy podcast every year, and you've been fortunate enough to came on last year, and I believe maybe even the year before as well, so I'm glad to have you.
Good to be on.
First place, I have kind of the general questions that I want to start with before we really dive into some of the really specific player questions, but a big topic that I wanted to get your take on first and foremost is DFS, Daily Fantasy, I guess, Leagues, although that's not what the S is standing for, and I'm blanking on it at the moment, but I kind of wanted to get your take on what you've seen. I mean, that's grown in the last 2 or 3 years, and how you've seen it affect fantasy baseball in general.
Well, the S stands for sports because it covers, you know, that you can play Daily Fantasy golf if you want, and I joke about that, but there's a writer out there who actually is very, he writes for Project Roto, and he does a great job with that, but so the way it's affected fantasy sports in a few ways, you know, one, there's more coverage kind of geared toward what's happening in each and every game. And you certainly had an element of that because, you know, ESPN leagues had daily moves, but now because there's a contest where people can win money, it really emphasizes, you know, there are columns where it's like, okay, you know, this is the lineup you should use tonight, or these are the players you should use, or this is who you should fade, you know, and all this, these other things. I kind of find interesting about all this writing is that while we certainly get more column width or, you know, more internet bandwidth devoted to this, I'm not really sure what a lot of the analysts are adding in terms of quality to the pool, because, you know, a lot of the recommendations are similar and there's a lot of common sense tied into them. And the other thing about this, and I've written about this before a couple of years ago, so I make this blackjack analogy. So if you play blackjack, you know, when you buy a book about how to win at blackjack, you know, there'll be recommendations on what hand you should hit on, you know, what hand you should fold, you know, where you should double down. And most of those recommendations are the same, but where you really win or lose at blackjack is in how you place your bets, you know, and the wisdom of, you know, when you should bet a lot, when you should bet a little, you know, this, that, and the other. And DFS is kind of similar. The key to DFS and winning money in DFS isn't completely in the players you pick, while it's certainly important, but it really is in how, you know, which contest you play, you know, whether you play like head-to-head versus somebody, you know, whether you play GPP or whether you play a different format. And I find that a lot of the analysis out there is lacking. And the reason for that is, you know, blackjack, you're playing against a casino, the house. So somebody's going to put out a book where it's like, well, you know, I don't care if you win $1 million or, you know, not, because you're not taking it from me, you're taking it from the casino. Where the DFS expert is reluctant to give out that information, understandably, because if that person gives you that information, it's taking money out of his pocket if you go take all of his or her recommendations, you know, and play against him, you know, at one of these DFS sites. So I find it, you know, it's kind of interesting. You know, it's certainly amplified the coverage, but I'm not necessarily sure what it's added in terms of the quality.
Interesting. Very interesting. What, where do you see the future of DFS, particularly with the baseball side of it? Is it going to be, you know, 50% of fantasy, you know, in 5 years when we're having the same podcast? Are we going to be basically talking DFS, or are we still going to be talking, you know, 5x5 leagues?
I think it's going to grow. The percentage is, you know, it's just a guessing game for me. I'm not an industry analyst in terms of that. I think it'll grow and get bigger. You know, it looks like the legislative hurdles have mostly been cleared or getting cleared, you know, here and there. You know, that's something else that's tough to predict in terms of, you know, like what each state or at the federal level is going to happen. But I also believe there's always going to be a place for people who like seasonal leagues. You know, one thing I know, like a lot of our readers at Baseball Prospectus, they like dynasty leagues, which are leagues you can keep players forever. They like keepers. They like that institutional, you know, sense of a league, you know, as opposed to DFS, which I admit I'm more of a keeper guy, but I like DFS. DFS is fun. Like, it's fun, you know, if you have a night in June where you're like, oh, you got, you know, I'm it's a slow day, or, you know, it's a night where not much is going on and nobody in my roto league is pitching. I'll throw a buck or two on a contest or a head-to-head and be like, you know what, it's just fun to root for these 10 guys. So I think there's a place for both. I don't necessarily see, you know, somebody saying, oh, I'm only going to play DFS or I'm only going to play seasonal. So I see some growth. As far as the percentage, you know, that's kind of hard to predict.
Okay, fair enough. Let's stick with the traditional now, and I got to ask you if you have some tips or some advice for those of us that are playing in 5x5 leagues. I know my draft is coming up, and I know I'm playing in a 5x5. I'm just, what are some of your general advice and tips and some things that you see maybe the average player that doesn't do well?
Well, you know, one thing, and I've talked a lot about this at Life's Fly Forever, which is our fantasy podcast at BP. You're much better off kind of going for value in an auction or draft as opposed to, you know, filling out a menu. And the way I look at this, you know, it's not like you're planning a dinner where it's like, I have to have salad, I have to have a course, you know, I have to have a side. You can really put your team together any way you want. So, you know, if you want to buy, you know, I see some people give advice like, you know, don't buy two catchers at $20 each, or, you know, make sure you have $100 outfield, or, you know, get an ace like Clayton Kershaw or Max Scherzer and then fill out with other people. Every league is different, so it's really much better to kind of go with the flow and populate your team that way, as opposed to getting stuck in a rigid game plan where if something changes, you know, and particularly in an auction, even a draft, you know, if somebody drafts the player you want, you sit there stunned for rounds like, well, I don't know what to do. You're just really putting yourself in a bad position.
And you touched on kind of the next topic I wanted to ask you about. It is about kind of the differences and the pros and the cons to an auction draft versus a snake draft. I think, you know, we've seen a little bit of a rise in auctions the last few years, but I think still most people probably play in the traditional snake drafts.
Yeah, I drafts are easier. And, you know, it's funny, I've probably seen the opposite phenomenon. And what I'm seeing more is, you know, you kind of asked about DFS, and to kind of go back to that a little bit, I'm seeing more of the casual fantasy player who plays like football and baseball and DFS. And for a baseball league, you know, they kind of want something simple. They don't want something where they're going to sit there for hours and try to figure out what to bid on people on top of how to rank them. So, yeah, there's definitely room for both, though. And what I think what I've seen with auctions is someone's like, oh, you know, this is something fun to try. You know, it's something I might want to do. And, you know, where auctions might be rising because of DFS, you know, DFS is something where you bid on players for the day. And again, you know, this is where the two things tie together. That could be the leapfrog of somebody younger who doesn't even know what fantasy baseball is and don't know the origins of it, looks at it like, well, you know, wow, you know, see, there's this other way to play fantasy baseball where you can bid on players. That's interesting. I think I'll try an auction league. So we kind of come full circle where, you know, years ago pre-DFS, like, auctions were kind of dying out. And now, to your point, you know, people playing DFS might think, oh, there's a way to do this in a seasonal league too.
Interesting. That's a kind of a good take, and funny how everything kind of comes full circle. That's a good point. Let me ask you about head-to-head versus roto. Kind of, once again, just the pros and cons and what you prefer.
Well, I'm a roto guy. I head-to-head is pure in some ways. You know, in roto, for example, saves and steals get really overvalued. And, you know, Billy Hamilton is an example. In Roto, he's somebody even in a mixed league gap to consider because he offers so much in one category. And the head-to-head people are right in that, you know, it's not as pure. It's not as sabermetric. It's kind of silly that Billy Hamilton has so much value. It's silly that a pitcher win has so much value. But in terms of the contest and the way it plays out, I enjoy Roto more because I have more fun head-to-head. I often find so there's formats where it's just straight points, and at the end of the year, you know, somebody winds up winning the money or the prize or the trophy. You know, you're not playing for money. But it just doesn't – the finishes aren't nearly as exciting. Like in Roto, you can have a category battle where you've got two or three categories up for grabs and two or three teams fighting for the lead at the end. I haven't seen that so much in head-to-head. And then head-to-head leagues, you also have leagues where, you know, teams play for a certain amount of time in this playoff. The thing I don't like about that is at the end, you know, and you see this more in fantasy football, even baseball, you can have a team that cruises through the season – and then, you know, their ace pitcher gets hurt or misses a start, and, you know, all of a sudden they lose in the head-to-head tournament. So it really just depends what you like. I'm not a – if you want to play head-to-head, if you like, you know, that playoff at the end, then play head-to-head. Roto does tend to have that. In terms of playing the game differently, head-to-head is more about volume. So you're better off trying to get guys – you know, especially on the pitching side, who are more durable. Someone's going to like play every week. Someone's going to put up the counting stats. In Roto, you can get away more with, you know, a pitcher who, say, you know, gives you 140, 150 innings, but they're really high quality innings. And head to head, you definitely need more depth. And, you know, one thing I like about head to head as opposed to Roto, I like the idea of, okay, so, you know, my I've got two guys I can put in my lineup. And one of them, you know, is better against lefties, or one of them's playing at Coors. You know, I like that kind of decision tree that you get. There's some of that in Roto, but you don't quite see that nearly as much. And so that's one thing about head-to-head that I do like better.
That's interesting. That's kind of a good – I hadn't thought of it that way. That's a good idea. I'd like to transition a little bit, if I can, now and talk a little bit more specific questions and maybe a little more player-specific type thing. First area I want to start is kind of a – what are the depth positions and some of the weaker positions this year, you know, overall, just as we, you know, head into our drafts?
I'm sorry, did you repeat that? I didn't
word that question very well. Let's start again. What are some positions of particular strength and particular weakness this year as we head into drafts?
Well, something that's changed a little bit. So it used to be that middle infield was weak. And, you know, now you look at middle infield and not just at the top, but there's a lot of depth there. So there are all these superstars, you know, like emerging superstars like Carlos Correa, Xander Bogaerts. And I don't worry so much about populating that. You know, it used to be I'd look at middle infield like, oh, gosh, you know, I have to get this guy or I'm in trouble. So there's that. And then this kind of flows into – corners and first base in particular, I've noticed, is a little bit thinner, particularly when you get past the 12-team mixed. So you just want to be careful not to wait for too long. You know, you can wind up in a position where, you know, you wind up with, you know, sorry about this, but like someone like Ryan Zimmerman, who a few years ago would have been a great pick, but now you look at, like, I don't know what he's going to do. You know, he's a big question mark. Catching, something that's really – this is where the real-life game has really impacted – the fantasy game, because so many teams are going for framers now and looking at that metric and really paying attention to it. You know, a good example is someone like Jason Castro. Jason Castro doesn't really offer much in fantasy unless you're an AL only, because the average is so bad. But, you know, the Twins signed this big contract because they looked at his framing metrics like, you know what, this guy's valuable, and, you know, one spot in the lineup, we're going to take the hit. So if you're in a two-catcher league of any stripe, you really got to be careful, because there's a lot of these guys floating around out there who could hurt you. On the pitching side, the way teams are utilizing starters, you know, we've seen this even more last year. I think there were about a dozen guys who threw 200 or more innings. You know, you go back even 3 or 4 years, and there are about 30 of those guys. It's really changing the game in terms of trying to get that volume, how you should spend on pitching. I'm really advising people this year, if you get an ace, make sure you get an ace. And the differentiation between, I'd say, the end of the second tier being the third tier and lower has really dissolved. And in an auction in particular, I don't see any need to go too high on those middle guys when the differentiation between them and the guys at the bottom isn't nearly as much as it once was.
That's interesting. So if I'm hearing you correctly, then you should spend more on the top of the pitching aces because the differentiation between the mid-tier and the low tier is not that drastic.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if you should spend more, but I would definitely say you should spend. There's some people who used to spread the wealth in pitching with the mentality that pitchers are risky, pitchers are unpredictable. But something I've seen the last few years is the pitchers at the top are about as predictable as the hitters at the top, which isn't to say that they're extremely predictable, but it is to say that the odds of you getting, you know, your ROI back on Max Scherzer, you know, assuming his finger's okay, or you know, just as good as your odds are of getting your ROI back on Mike Trout, which surprises some people. But, you know, I've analyzed this for years, and that's really the case.
Well, that kind of gives me a perfect segue, because I think there are about, I don't know, 8 to 10 names that I'd like to ask you about in kind of descending order of where they're going in drafts and your thoughts on them.
Sure.
Let's start with Max Scherzer, who you just mentioned. I know maybe I'm a little too close to it as a Nats fan, and you know, I write about the team, but his fingers got me really worried. But he still seems to be going, I don't know, very end of the first round, kind of mid-second in that area. Are you taking the gamble on Max Scherzer this year?
Well, I did get him in a league that had a very early, it was an industry league, but it was a very early auction. And it was a 260 NL only, and I bought him for 32. And then in labor, like a few weeks later, he went for 28. But yeah, his price dipped a little bit, and then it stopped. And I know he had an outing where he said everything was fine. He was throwing with a different grip, and he was okay. I'm still bidding on him, I'd say, with like some of the other non-Kershaw aces. But for me, at one point, I had him right behind Kershaw, and I was more aggressive on him than other people. I backed off of that just because while I think he'll be fine, there's a difference between spring training and you know, going out there and doing well. Now, I don't even know if he pitched in a real game. It might have been a simulated game. I don't remember. But he was a real spring training game. It was interesting that, and going out and facing major league hitters, you know, 32, 33 times a season. What I worry about with Scherzer, it isn't that he's going to do poorly. I worry that, you know, he's going to have a setback and he's going to miss, like, you know, four or five starts, or that Astros might go, you know what, like, let's just sit him for a month and see what happens with the finger. You know, we saw this with Josh Beckett a few years ago when he had blisters. Like, finger injuries for pitchers are really tough because, you know, if anything goes wrong and you can't grip the ball, you can't pitch. You know, it's not like being a hitter where you can wear gloves or you can do something where it's like, well, you know, it still hurts or it still feels funny, but I can swing the bat. Like, it's a really delicate thing. So I'm mostly confident in Scherzer, but I feel like I'm discounting him enough. Like in a draft, for example, I would probably take him like middle to back of the second round. And I know that's probably not going to get him in most leagues.
Gotcha. I got to ask you about the two Nats hitters that seem to be going in the first round. Trey Turner is going, shoot, 5, 6, 7, 8 overall, and Harper kind of similar area, a little farther back. Are you aggressively bidding on Turner and or Harper?
I haven't been. You know, Turner, I just – different skill set, but he reminds me, I mentioned before, of Carlos Correa, where Correa was – people were really amped on him. And hitters, your second time around, first full season, tend to slip a little bit. You know, in Turner's case, a little different because he's got that speed, and, you know, people feel like, well, even if he doesn't hit, he's going to steal like 40, 45 bases. My problem with that is, well, I believe that. I feel like a Turner who hits, like, say, 270 or 280 with limited power, with that speed, he's still somebody you want, but he's just not a first-round pick to me or end-of-the-first-round guy. Harper, I really like Harper. I feel like there's still a lot of value with him, but, you know, he's still being drafted. Where's he going? 7th or 8th overall. I'd have to go, like, look. There's not much of a discount there. So even if he bounces all the way back, he's really going to have to pretty much duplicate or come close to duplicating his 2015 to be a bargain.
Right.
So I'm okay with him at that draft slot, but I'm just – you know, I don't want to go so far as to say, well, you know, he's guaranteed to do what he did in 2015, because, you know, outside of Mike Trout, it feels like there are no guarantees.
Another guy I'm not surprised is going extremely high, but Gary Sanchez definitely caught me as a name that's going really high in drafts.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing about Sanchez is that I feel like people are, I mean, not so much in drafts, but some other experts are looking at his draft status and saying he's going too high. I feel like he's almost being drafted appropriately. Just because if you look at what he did last year and you build in the regression you'd expect, it's like, well, okay, I get it. He's not going to hit 40 to 45 home runs. But there's a good chance he could hit 25 to 30 in that park, and he's a catcher. And so even if he only hits 260, and isn't the hitter he was last year, at catcher, there's a lot of value in that. And again, this is actually what I was talking about with catcher. The catcher right now is a position where teams are just aren't looking for hitting. So while I don't believe in position scarcity, that's the one position where I'm willing to bid or draft up a little bit for offensive production. So, I'm not saying that Sanchez is going to be a fantasy monster, but I do believe that people are almost being too cute with him and predicting this kind of regression where it's like, well, unless you think he's not a prospect at all, he's going to completely fall off the map, you almost have to bid that price for him or draft him in that slot.
All right, that sounds about right. How about kind of the young middle infielders in baseball now? Alex Bregman, who's going, I don't know, eighth, ninth round, and Dansby Swanson, who seems to be going maybe a little bit later.
I'm okay with Bregman, although he strikes me as a hitter who's going to, I don't want to say struggle, but is going to slip a little bit in his second year. I mentioned Correa before. We saw it with Correa last year. Bregman's really talented, and I have no doubt in him long-term. I just see a little bit of, second time to the league, pitchers catching up with him a little bit. Swanson I really like, although Swanson's one of those better in real life than in fantasy players.
Good call.
He's just someone I could see like being a guy who, hits like two, the average will be there, hits 280, 290, but hits 10 home runs, steals 15 bases. And you look at the man of the year and you're like, yeah, that was really good, but it wasn't somebody that I should have really went crazy for in a draft. Although again, he's being drafted appropriately or maybe slightly overdrafted. I don't see him as a big, I don't see people really reaching for him the way they're reaching for Turner.
Very true. And kind of final name, Andrew Benintendi seems to be going kind of in between those two guys, 10th round-ish. It's tough not to like him batting second in that order, but like you say, man, that's a lot of pressure.
He's another one. So I know there's some of my colleagues at Baseball Perspective love this guy. And, my feeling about him is similar to Swanson, which is, well, I get it. Like, I get why you're excited about him as a player. He has a high floor, like Swanson, he's going to hit for average. But I look at the rest of him, and it's like, well, he almost looks like, and I hate comps, but he almost looks like Melky Cabrera back when Melky Cabrera was running.
Hmm.
Not the Melky Cabrera PED year, but like Melky Cabrera, a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of power, some speed, batting average is there. But I hear the way some people talk about Benintendi, it's almost like they're expecting a 2020 season. And even in that park, I just don't see it. So I like Benintendi, but he's being drafted maybe a round and a half too early for my taste. And some of this is there's just so many outfielders out there that you can get, even in an AL only. I did AL labor, and I was amazed at how many outfielders are just kind of sitting there at the end being plucked off of between $5 and $10, where you're like, well, there's some value here. I just don't see the reason to reach for Benintendi, in a situation where you can just get so many guys at a better price.
That's a good call. How about more of a general question, but who are some players that you are kind of avoiding in drafts and vice versa? Who are some guys that you kind of seem to be finding on a lot of your rosters?
Well, let's see. It's funny because I've mostly done – to start with the guys I've been getting, it's weird. I've mostly been doing AL auctions so far just because of the way that the calendar shakes out for me. So somebody I've been getting who I kind of like who's an AL guy is Yolesky Gurriel. And, it's really funny. The numbers on him are very underwhelming, but a lot of our prospect guys at BP say he's one of the best Cuban hitters of his generation. When you look at someone like Yasmani Tomas, who came over and was, you know, underwhelming in his first year and then hit 31 home runs last year. Gurriel doesn't have that kind of power profile, but he does have a contact profile that suggests he could hit like 290 or 300. And if he does that in that lineup, you know, he's obviously going to be a buy, even if he only hits 15 home runs. The guy in the National League that I tend to be targeting on the hitting side is Drubal Cabrera. And, you know, it's funny because the one NL I did, I actually didn't get him because there was somebody else in that league with me who I know who knew I wanted him. But Cabrera, no one is talking about this. So Cabrera made the same adjustments that Daniel Murphy made with the Mets the year before. Kevin Long worked with him, and, you know, he had to make the swing adjustment. And, you know, I was actually looking this up. From July 1st on, these are Drubal's numbers. 15 home runs, 257 plate appearances, hit 306, on base 358, slugged 566.
Wow.
So, I mean, this is the thing. Like, here's a guy, he had 23 home runs last year. It's not like he didn't hit. I think the guy could hit 25 to 30 home runs at shortstop. And I just feel like nobody is talking about him as someone who could do that. Like, he's really, you know, you mentioned Swanson. He's being valued, even in NL. He's being valued below all of these shortstops. So I'm like, you know, I'd rather have Cabrera, even if he just does what he did last year. You're talking about a guy who can hit 20, 25 home runs. You know, the average would be great, but I'll take that at the ADP. Guys I'm avoiding, you know, I'm trying to think of somebody who's, you know, jumping out at me as a big overpay. I wouldn't say I'm avoiding him, but, you know, and he just signed, he's in the news, he signed a contract. Tim Anderson is someone who I don't think is going to have quite the impact in his first season as some people think he is. Like, I think he'll be fine, but I don't necessarily see him as like a huge power threat. And at the price he's going, it's almost like he's going to have to both hit for power and hit for speed to get to where he's going. You know, and on the NL side, you know, I mentioned Turner. I'm not exactly avoiding him, but I think he's a little bit overpriced. Someone I'm avoiding in the NL based on their price. It's this is a tough question for me because I tend not to target or avoid players specifically. I tend to instead go like through a value based approach in auctions.
Let me ask the question a different way then. How about some sleepers? And when I say sleepers, somebody that's going, you know, outside the top 150 to 200 that you think is a nice value. You mentioned Cabrera, obviously.
Yeah, I mentioned Cabrera. You know, someone I kind of like whose average is low, you know, just, again, based on where he's going, ADP is Leonis Martin, and I always seem to mention him every year. You know, this is a guy who hits like 10 to 15 home runs, steals 20, 25 bases. He had that one bad year in Texas where he thought a favor, but otherwise he's just, you know, he's kind of a plotter. He's just one of those players who manages to produce. You know, somebody else I like who I kind of got, he's not a sleeper anymore. He's like, I got chastised for taking him in labor and blowing his price, Kevin Kiermaier. You know, Kevin Kiermaier, I see like 15, 30 potential in him. And, you know, something about him in the second half is he just jumped off. He started running. He wasn't getting caught. So I know the injury risk with him, but the upside is tremendous, and I'm just all over that. And I think, you know, Kiermaier and Cabrera are the two guys, when we put it together, our top 300 rankings at BP, I was much higher on the two of them than anyone else. So, you know, to kind of answer your question in terms of guys I'm high on, you know, those are the two guys that jump out. You know, players I'm low on, you know, thinking from an ADP perspective, Javi Baez, I see people reaching for him, and, you know, I love him as a player. I just don't see him getting a full season of at-bats and the way he's being drafted. That's kind of what you need to get out of him for him to be worth it. Aledmys Diaz, he hit 423 in April last year. You know, outside of that, he was just kind of ordinary. And he's another one. He's being drafted really high up the chain. And I could see him hitting like 270 with 15 to 20 home runs, which is fine. But I for where he's going, it just doesn't make sense for me to reach and pay that price for him. You know, someone else that I'm avoiding that people are high on is James Paxton.
And interesting.
I believe in the skills. He's just never proven he can stay healthy. And it's not even arm injuries. Like, he just has these weird injuries where he can't stay on the field. So I don't want to pay the going price for Paxton to get like 100 innings. I'd rather get the guy who I think it was Jeff Sullivan at Fangraphs identified as, you know, behind Paxton's having the second best pitch improvement, and that's Daniel Norris on the Tigers, who, you know, a lot cheaper than Paxton, not quite the same upside, but has some upside. And if I'm going to go with upside and don't have to reach, I'd rather Norris than Paxton.
Interesting. Final question for me, Mike, is just one final nugget prediction or piece of advice for, you know, fantasy players like myself who maybe are, you know, middle of the road kind of players.
You know, I gave this advice last night on the podcast that I did. So if you're having an auction or draft, at some point, whether you're using my values, your own values, you know, Pakoda, whatever you're using, treat it like you'd treat it for studying for a test. Like, don't overthink your auction or draft. You know, get to the point where the day before, maybe even 2 days before, ideally, you know, you want to adjust for news or whatnot, but have fun. Like, don't overthink your draft. Don't get nervous about it. The best drafts or auctions come when you're relaxed, you know, when you're in a situation where you're like, okay, like, I can do this, you know, I'm prepared, you know, I know what I'm doing. It's really like studying for a test. And I see too many people get really amped up and like over prepare, and I've done it too. You know, they get over psyched and they psych themselves out and they wind up having a bad draft or a bad auction. So that's the biggest piece of advice I can give, which is put yourself in a good mental state for this. And I think you'll do better than, you know, if you're getting really nervous and worried about how you'll do.
That's always good to know. Good thing, good reminder and good thing to tell everybody. That's a good call. Mike, how about a spot here for your plugs where people can find you at BP, Twitter, anything you want to plug?
So baseballprospectusallonword.com. You can still sign up and get a membership. It is a pay site, but we have about 20 articles a week, and it's all, you know, a fantasy articles a week. There's more than that with the subscription. We have a super premium service called the Bat Signal, which for an additional $10 for the year, any one of the 14 writers now on staff on the fantasy side will answer your questions within 24 hours. You know, this is great because it's from away from the prying eyes of Twitter, where if you ask a question, everybody gets to see it. If you do prefer to see me on Twitter, it's Mike Gianella, all one word, G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And I'm on there a lot as well. So you can, you know, talk to me there about fantasy baseball and other things.
Well, Mike, thank you once again for coming on and giving us a fantasy education that we all need before our drafts. And thank you so very much for coming back on the show.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It was, like I've said to you before in the past, Ron, at any time.
Well, thank you very much. And as you just heard, that was episode 95 with our special guest, Baseball Prospectus fantasy baseball writer and fantasy baseball guru, Mike Gianella. So, Mike, thanks for joining me and giving me a good fantasy baseball education with my draft just a few days away now. So, thank you very much for that. That's it for this week. Bye for now. Uh-huh.
The Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. Yeah. The Baron, speaking for the awareness. Truth has been spoken, the people say it's apparent. Wake up every day to the voice of the leader. The home run, strike out, the Baron, the teacher. I am a natural, my podcast has been the national. Bryce Harper power, Ken Griffey with attitude. No more than most, I am built for the stage. Every time I speak facts without turning the page, let me explain. I'm like Babe Ruth, I call the shots. Speaking to all my people, this message will never stop. Home run, every show, bringing in every fact. This feeling will overcome and I'm never turning it back. The Baron, the people's podcast in this win. The benefactor of benefit, know the truth is within. The Baron, speaking for awareness. The truth has been spoken. The people always say it's apparent, you feel me? The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the Baseball Podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The Baron, speaking for the awareness. Truth has been spoken, the people say it's apparent. Wake up every day to the voice of the leader. The home run, strike out, the Baron, the teacher. I am a natural, my podcast has been the national. Bryce Harper power, Ken Griffey with attitude. No more than most, I am built for the stage.
Every time I speak facts without turning the page, let me explain. I'm like Babe Ruth, I call the shots. Speaking to all my people, this message will never stop. Home run, every show, bringing in every fact. This feeling will overcome and I'm never turning it back. The Baron, the people's podcast in this win. The benefactor of benefit, know the truth is within. The Baron, speaking for awareness, the truth having spoken. The people always say it's apparent, you feel me? The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the baseball podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that. The people's podcast never ended. You are now one-on-one with the Baron. The Baron of the baseball podcast. With forever, no other way you can call that.